sermon title this morning, we're continuing on in our series on the great I Am statements of Jesus. And if you've been following with us, you'll have been here this last couple of weeks. I was away on vacation, but I am very thankful for the staff that covers for a while I'm away. Kevin spoke on the great I Am, the statement of Jesus where he says, I am the good shepherd, last week. And the week before that, Peter spoke on the statement that Jesus makes in the book of John, where he says, I am the light of the world. And all of these statements of Jesus, what I find so cool is that the Bible is connected. It's a continuous story about God. And just like we've been singing about, this great I Am is the God who shows up to Moses in the burning bush in the book of Genesis, Exodus. And then again, when Jesus shows up on this earth, he makes statements as well about I Am. When Moses met God in the burning bush, we had God say to him, he says, who should I tell him? When I go to Pharaoh, like, what leg do I have to stand on to tell him to let the people go? God says to him, I am who I am. And then when Jesus shows up thousands of years later, throughout the book of John, he makes seven statements saying, I am. And this morning, we're focusing in on the statement that Jesus says, I am the bread of life. And what we're going to look at is the sixth chapter of John. So if you got your Bibles or your smartphones or whatever, and you want to check out the sixth chapter of John, John chapter 6, we're going to kind of go through that this morning. And there's an amazing kind of progression in this chapter, and it's very intentional on John. The book at the beginning starts with people mobbing Jesus, flocking to him, moving towards him in huge crowds. And by the end of the chapter, they're dissing him, and they're ditching him, and they're deserting him, and people are walking away from him. And sometimes crowds can be like that. You know, Jesus wasn't just taken away by the crowds. He was like, I'm here, I'm on a mission, and this is what I'm about. And we'll find a little bit more about that today. But it starts with actual physical bread. What happened was we had all these crowds of people coming around Jesus, and the crowd kept swelling up, and there was at least 5,000 men, so there could have been at least 15,000. You imagine Rogers Arena full. That's the number of people that started to, like, flock towards him. Can you imagine that on a hillside? You got the Sea of Galilee there. They're on the hillside, and Jesus is speaking to them, and they're just there, just hanging on every word that he's saying and everything, and they don't want to go home. They forget that they're hungry, that they got no food, and it gets time for them to get fed, and the disciples look around, they go, you know, maybe we just got to send these people away, let's get rid of them, kind of thing. And Jesus goes, we got any food around? And they go, well, Jesus, don't you know, Philip says, this is going to cost like a whole lot of denarius, a whole lot of money. You can imagine, to feed 15,000 people or so, they estimated like 200 days wage. So that's almost a year's worth of work. So you think about that. At the very cheapest, they're going to go $30,000, maybe $100,000 is what it's going to cost to feed all these people. But Jesus goes, what do we got? And this little boy comes forward. He's got five loaves and two fish. And Jesus takes it. He gives thanks to God for it. And then he just starts handing it out. And it just keeps going. The bread starts going and going. Can you imagine? I mean, we got four loaves, not even, right here at the front. Can you imagine if that just kept, you kept being able to multiply that? Like, that's spectacular. And the people were amazed. They were so impressed. And you can imagine, I mean, these are a group of people. We don't understand hunger, really, in this society that much. I've been to places where there is, like, abject poverty. People go to sleep at night hungry. That could have been their situation. You think about your stomach kind of grinding against each other, itself. And Jesus is there just going, and they just, this huge celebration. Can you imagine the party? They gather up extra basketfuls of food. And all these people go, wow, if he can do that, can you imagine what else he can do for me? And they want to take him by storm and make him into king. And like so often with Jesus, he goes, you know what? Your agenda, it's not my agenda. I'm going out to the hills. And he just disappears. He walks away. He walks away. Verse 14 and 15 of that chapter, when the people saw him do this miraculous sign, they exclaim, surely he is a prophet we've been expecting. They're backtracking to Moses. They said, oh, he's like Moses. He's like our hero from way past. When Jesus saw that they were ready to force him to be their king, he slipped away to the hills by himself. And Jesus goes. He doesn't do what they expect. And this morning, I want to kind of key in on that this morning. This whole, what ends up happening later on is this dialogue between this same crowd and Jesus, where they keep saying, we expect you to do this, Jesus. And Jesus does something very different. And I think if you're like me in your relationship with God, and maybe you've been on a spiritual journey with him for a long time, if we're really honest, we pray and we start asking God to do things. We say, God, you need to do this. And I've got this agenda for you. And why don't you do this? And there's other times where it just breaks through, right? And it just seems like, oh, God's everywhere. He's like right here. He's doing this for me. And the thing about God is, being the great I am, his ways are bigger than ours, are broader than ours. His picture is much bigger than ours. And we've got this tiny little world that we live in. And Jesus says, I am. I will do what is really needed in the world and in your life. But you know, for us to grab hold of that whole picture of Jesus and to trust him to be that kind of God, I think it's also incredibly important to understand that he's also a God that is compassionate. One of the greatest things, one of the things that we see through this miracle, though it was a sign, it was also a way of Jesus connecting with the people and saying, I am in touch with every one of your needs, and I am full of compassion. We have a God who is full of compassion. You know, so many other kind of worldviews and stuff may have a God that's sort of distant, removed, and big and grand, but not really in touch with our needs. And whatever need that you might be going through right now, there's a God of compassion that is wanting to reach out, to help you, to restore you, to meet your need. And I think for us to really trust God as King and as the great I am, it's so good to know that he's also full of compassion towards us. Whatever it is, the need that you might be going through, it might be relational, it might be at work, it might be financial. God is a compassionate God. And people see him that way, and they're drawn to him, and the crowds keep following him. Well, he disappears, and the disciples go, well, I guess, what do we do? Well, we'll get in our boat and head back across the Sea of Galilee and go back to our hometown of Capernaum. Now, I had a wonderful opportunity last year to go and be on the Sea of Galilee. And to actually get in a boat, that's not a great picture, but there's we had this one guy in our team. His name was Scott Weeb. We always had him. He doesn't look too much like it because he's got glasses on, but he was sort of our Jesus figure. Just had a great beard and everything, and he was a lot of fun. But we were on this boat, and you can see, actually, there was a bit of a storm while we were out there. It was nothing like what the disciples were about to encounter, but in the middle of the night, the disciples went on the Sea of Galilee, and it's 650 feet below sea level. So just the way, I guess, the impact works, all of a sudden storms can just kick up. And it was interesting because, I mean, it was kind of stormy. I was asking the boat whether we could, you know, stop for a bit and go for a dive and stuff. But one of the things I learned from the guy who was leading our tour is that the Jewish people at that time had the greatest fear of water. Like, water was not really a part of their deal. There was a couple of fishermen in the disciples' ranks, but for the most part, this was the great deep, the unknown, the darkness, Sheol, Hades. Everything was, like, scary and mysterious, and it would freak them out just even being out on the water. Well, in the middle of the night, with a storm going, these guys had anxiety off the charts. Like, they were looking to be heavily medicated on this kind of thing. And so they were freaking right out, and then, wouldn't you know it, on top of all of that, all of a sudden, they see this figure walking across the water towards them. I mean, they're thinking, this is everything we believe and know about what comes out of the deep kind of thing. And here's Jesus. John chapter 6, verse 20, he says, don't be afraid, I am here. The I am is here. John's actually making specific reference in this chapter 6 to the I am of Moses, the I am who's eternal, the I am who is over all of creation and whatever storms may come. Here's God coming and saying, I am present with you. I'm here for you. Jesus is just as present when you're struggling in a storm as when you're sailing in the sunshine. I think that's hard for us to believe. In our own little world, we can't see it any other way than, Jesus, why don't you just make sunshine happen for me all the time? But that's the reality of it. God is actually the same great I am, is there, though we may not see him. He is just as much there when we're struggling in the storm as when we're riding and sailing through life. And you might be in a season of sailing right now. You might be in a time of storm. You might be in a combination of those two things. Oftentimes that's what life is like. But Jesus is there to be with us and to be among us. And it's really an expression of our faith to say, God, I'm going to reach out to you. So oftentimes when we're sailing and, you know, the sunshine, it's so easy to forget about God, don't we? And then when the storm comes, it's like, oh, God, please. I mean, the disciples weren't any different than us. I love what Henry David Thoreau wrote in his journal in 1851. This is 150 years ago. He says, the more we know about the ancients, the more that we find they were like the moderns. Yeah. Isn't that true? Like, humanity doesn't change. Our core needs, who we are, what we're looking for. We're looking for the sunshine. We're looking for that. But Jesus, at times, will allow us to go through the storm. And his greater purposes are being served even through that. And here was Jesus showing up, meeting them in their need, and saying, peace be still. And John describes it as, all of a sudden, immediately they arrived at their destination. And they're going, wow. Okay, so we saw all this bread get multiplied. Then we're in this high anxiety situation, and God comes and meets us there. I want to invite Nate to come up, because I thought it was so cool that their life group that meets, it happens to meet at our house every other Sunday, had the topic of anxiety this last week. And who of us doesn't struggle with anxiety? And as Nate was leaving out the door, he says to me, hey, you know what, I just fire off a little email to everybody that was in the group, just to let them know, just in case they weren't there or whatever, that what we looked at that night. And I'm like, would you like me to send it to you? So he sends it to me, and I'm like reading this, and it's like profound. It's amazing. So I thought I'd have him to read it to you here today, and it fits with this topic of anxiety. It says, here's the summary of what we discussed this past Bible study. Topic, biblical response to anxiety. Intro. This is amazing. You could preach. We looked at anxiety this past Sunday and shared with each other what makes us anxious and discussed what God instructs in terms of managing anxiety. So if you want to read the next content summary, that'd be awesome.
Okay. So we start like this. In life, we encounter all sorts of adverse situations, ranging from school decisions, especially for young adults, and career, conflicts, finances, among other things. Being human, we sometimes respond to these situations by worrying about the outcome instead of trusting God with the situation. In this study we had, we looked at the example of Abraham, the father of faith, during some of his most doubtful times. We saw how God promised Abraham and Sarah a son, but rather than trusting God to be true to his promise, Abraham thought he would help God in fulfilling his promise by having a child through Hagar. And we looked at how we can sometimes pull moves like Abraham in our lives when we do things in a way that isn't honoring to God in response to our anxiety. So, for example, I received encouragement and support from God and from my friends that I had a call in my life to go into hospital practice in pharmacy. And it's quite competitive to get into, so I got a bit anxious about that. And a situation came up where one time I had this idea. So, okay, let's see here. One time I was anxious about this call, and I had the idea that I would help God out by cheating on a quiz that I hadn't prepared for because I heard other students found a way to cheat on this quiz. And so sounded like a great idea. I was kind of iffy about it. But then I called up my friend, and I said to him, hey, man, we have this quiz coming up. How about we write this quiz as a group? I'll write it first, you write it with me afterwards. No one will know all the other groups are doing it, and then we'll be able to ace this quiz. We'll do just fine. What happened is later that night, I was getting anxious about that call I made, and I woke up in that morning, and I was so convicted. I was eating with Uncle Steve and Auntie Glenda, and they're just chowing down, and I'm quaking on the inside, and so I decided to tell him, hey, I made this tough call. What should I do? And so I called my friend back, And I tell him, hey, you know that idea I had, it was actually a mistake. How would you feel about us writing the quiz independently? And it was fine. He was fine with that. So it was a bit embarrassing for me, but it was like such a big weight had dropped off me from that. And so I ended up studying for the quiz. It was 2 days later, and I ended up doing fine on it. So practical application, we look at how God instructs us, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus, Philippians 4, 6, and 7. And then again, Jesus himself says, so don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow has enough worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. So looking at this, what basis do we have for not worrying? Well, we have a God who loves us and whose intentions towards us are only good, and he cares for us even about the little things on our minds. Those things matter to him too. And also, he doesn't stop caring for us when we have little faith. As Jesus said, even in Matthew 6, 30 to 34, he says, don't you know that God cares? If he cares about the birds, doesn't he care much more about you, O you of little faith? So even when we have little faith, God can care for us then. And then more practically, so when we have particular situations which we find trigger our anxiety, we can take these situations to God and know that he'll care for us. Does this mean that we can be irresponsible and poor stewards of our time, myself included, and expect God to bail us out? No. But we can seek to honor God with our response and trust that he will always use the outcome for good, regardless of what that outcome is, Romans 8, 28. So some steps our group came up with chatting together is we discovered the following ways to honor God in how we handle anxiety. So we said we can pray about the situation both together and independently. We can keep a journal so that we can look at situations like this in the past where God's been faithful and look at the examples of other people. We can also think about situations just through discussing with people. Hey, have you ever had something like this happen to you? What did God do? And see about that. Another thing that may be a bit difficult is being honest with yourself and with your loved ones. What areas do you struggle with? What is your weakness in terms of anxiety so that you can actually help each other with your anxiety? I hope this has been helpful. And yeah, I said, feel free to invite you guys out to the Bible study.
That's awesome. Thanks. Let's give him a hand. That was awesome. Thanks, Nate. You know, as Jesus then brings the picture back to being the bread of life, the crowds followed him across the lake because they started to cling to his words. And they also saw his miracles. And they said, you know what? Maybe he can help us. I mean, the common anxieties that we all have, they said, we're going to hunt him down. And they came after him saying, you know, if you can do this for us, what else can you do? And as we kind of close things up here and then move into communion, I just want to bring out some of the dialogue that Jesus had with this crowd, with these people that are very, very similar to us, deal with and struggle with the same things. It happened to be in a place called Capernaum. I had a chance to be there. I think some of the ruins from that, you've got a slide for that. There's Capernaum. It's pretty cool to know that the places that are written in the Bible about, they found them. Like this is the town of Capernaum. I think the next slide shows you the temple. There I am. It's pretty phenomenal. It says this conversation happened in this temple. It's pretty cool. So you've got the same kind of people as us going through this situation going, God, I want you to do what I want you to do right now in my struggles and my challenges and what I'm doing. And they said, you know, we want you to be what we want you to be. I love what Warren Wiersbe, a scholar, writes. He says, Jesus is the I am, not the I will be whatever you want me to be. And you know what? Ultimately, we don't want God to just be whatever we want to be, right? We can't trust ourselves. We could never trust God if he was. But the great thing about the I am, the eternal God, is that he knows the end from the beginning. He knows the outcomes. He knows where he wants us to go. And he says, I am the bread of life. If you're really looking for life, if you want sustenance and nourishment in your anxieties and your challenges and what you go through, then please come to me. And I love this illustration of the bread of life. And we've got the bread here this morning. Well, here's another picture. This is a little bit of a travelogue, but while I was in Israel as well, we had a chance to sit with a Bedouin group of people who actually still live like thousands of years ago. And this little old lady was showing us how to make bread over that fire right there. So you might be able to see to her right there is all these little kind of almost pita type things. And she puts them on top of a metal kind of a shell, and it becomes almost like a tortilla. It was incredible. It tasted amazing. And we're sitting around these folks. And I mean, I was reminded, in spite of the different world that they live in, how similar things are to ours. The kids, you can see a bunch of little kids. There was kids running around all over. They got a little bit unruly. And while I'm taking pictures here like this with my iPhone at the back of the group there, this little guy is next to me, and he's like, I want to see that, I want to see that. And I'm just playing with him and having some fun. Well, I guess she thought that we were being, or he was being a little bit too loud. So all of a sudden, I feel the stick just all of a sudden, ping, pounces off my head and hits the kid there. And I go, whoa, this is crazy. But I guess that's how, you know, kids and parents and elders and that whole thing, it's in every society. But, you know, no matter who we are, we're looking for life, right? We're looking for the kinds of things, relief from our anxiety. We're looking for that thing, that sometimes sort of elusive thing. What is it that's going to give me fulfillment, going to nourish me, going to feed my soul? And Jesus is saying, you know what, I can give you bread one time. But what you really need is something more eternal. The people came after him, and we'll pick up that dialogue. We miss out on life because we, like the ancients, we think it's about now. What can God do for us now? Verse 25, he says, they found him on the other side of the lake, and they asked, Rabbi, when did you get here? And Jesus replied, I tell you the truth. You want to be with me because I fed you, not because you understood the miraculous signs. You know, Jesus nails it. He knows our thoughts and his minds. I mean, he's gracious and compassionate. And even as Nate said, whatever little faith we have, he's going to respond to it. But he looks at these people and goes, you just want me to like be your ATM, your vending machine right now. Just give me what I need right now. We're so much like that, aren't we? If ever we've been in a now society, it's like, God, I want it now. And give me patience, right? That's so oftentimes how we approach it. And, you know, whatever we are, we go on things like right now. Go on a vacation to feel a little better. Do some retail therapy. Find a new love. Or get the old love to give me some love. You know, whatever it is, it's like, I want, you know, and we're looking to kind of solve our problems now. And Jesus says, I want you to seek first me, the great I am. If you really believe and trust, I can meet you at your deepest level. You might find something that's okay for a little bit, like a little snack to kind of hold you over. But if you really want the deep life, the nourishing life, purpose and meaning, you've got to move past the whoosh type experience that we're sort of addicted to as people. And it may take some pursuit. It may take some quietness. It may take some stillness. It might take some time to say, you know what, I'm gonna move towards that. I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about even on a physical level, how we, you know, our sustenance and food and how that works. When I was working in with youth and youth ministry, we used to do, and many of you have done this, we used to do different kinds of food events. I mean, students are always into eating. And we did, we would do chocolate fondues, and we also did at times something called a progressive dinner. You may be familiar with that, where you set up homes, and then you move as a group from one home to another, which is a pretty intimidating, scary thing when you're working with teenagers. But they move, and you go to a house, and you have an appetizer at one house. Then you all get in the car and you drive to another house and you have a salad at another house. And then you go to another, you know, get back in the car and you drive to another house. And many of you have done it. You know the deal. You eat a main course and then you might go to another place and have a dessert. And it's this incredible adventure. It's just a lot of fun for anybody at any age. But I was thinking, you know, how often, when I was thinking about the gratification of a chocolate fondue, well, you get a quick sugar rush, right? And it's great and it's good and there's a place for that. But I was thinking about the bread of life is so much more often a progressive dinner approach than a chocolate fondue. I mean, there might be times where God just meets us powerfully and he touches us and we have this experiential thing. But oftentimes, it's going to be much more about saying, you know what, I'm going to come and taste from God. The invitation is, come and taste and see that I'm good, right? That's what Jesus says. He says, come and taste from me and I'm going to meet you. And it may take, you know, I'm going to meet you at this level and you're going to go, oh, wow, that appy was good for me. And we go a little further and we go, oh, he's meeting my need with some salad. You know, he's meeting my need with. And as long as we're willing to go that journey with him, he will meet us as the bread of life. It's going to be moving beyond the now and my thing and what I want. And it's going to be about coming to Jesus and saying it's about what you do. People miss out on life because they're just looking for this immediate deal. I think it means coming to God and instead coming to him and saying, what do you want? I'm going to define my life by you rather than by me. Where are you going, God? How do I get in on that? And let him ask you some questions as well. How do you see the storm right now, God? What's my way through this storm? I'm in clear sailing right now. Maybe it's just a thanking God, even in that moment of clear sailing, and God's nourishing us and giving us the bread of life. People miss out of life too, because oftentimes it becomes what I do. Same for those folks back then. Jesus responds in verse 27. He says, but don't be so concerned about perishable things like food. Spend your energy seeking the eternal life that the Son of Man can give you. For God the Father has given me the seal of his approval. And they replied, we want to perform God's works too. What should we do? Jesus told them, this is the only work God wants from you. Believe in the one he has sent me. You know what I love about what God does? And we actually sang about it in a song this morning. It's he doesn't lay an extra burden on us to do. He actually says, let me do. Believe in me. And as people here on this side of the cross and his resurrection, part of what communion is really saying, I believe in you, God. It's making that step towards him and saying, I'm going to get rid of my pride. My pride is all about what I do, how I be a good enough person. How do I, you know, do enough good things? How do I look good in other people's lives, eyes and in God's eyes? And instead it means coming to God and saying, I'm giving up control. I'm humbly going to come to you. I'm giving up on my own self-improvement plan. What will I do? And I'm letting you touch me and meet me in my brokenness, in my neediness, in what I need. We miss out on life because we think we can conjure up life. It's through what we do. And Jesus says, I want you to come and you'll experience the bread of life when you believe. Believe is said at least 10 times in this passage. Jesus keeps coming back to me. He says, but just believe. But just believe. And sometimes we look at him and go, is that too simple? Well, belief actually means I come to a point where I actually walk in and receive and become a follower of Jesus. And one of those ways is God invites us to come and to believe in him and to take part in the symbols of the bread and the cup and the juice and say, I believe in what you did for me, God. It's what you do, what you did. It's not what I do. Then the bread of life comes and it nourishes our souls and it lifts us up and it's grace and it's empowering and it's not a weight. I have to do something more. People miss out on life because the answer, that is Jesus, seems too simple. Sometimes we talk about Sunday school answers, right? And there's the pastor who's telling the story, and the kids are up front, and he describes this thing, and I don't know if you ever heard that, and the kids go, you know, I think I'm supposed to answer Jesus, but it sounds a lot like a squirrel to me kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes we kind of reject or in our minds resist the answer because it might seem too simple. In verse 30, 31, they answered, well, show us a miraculous sign if you want us to believe in you. What can you do? After all, our ancestors ate manna while they journeyed through the wilderness. The scriptures say Moses gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus replied, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But you haven't believed in me, even though you have seen me. And then the people began to murmur in disagreement because he had said, I am the bread that came down from heaven. They said, isn't this Jesus, the son of Joseph? We know, his mom and dad. How can he say, I came down from heaven? Here we have Jesus saying, you know what? There's something eternal here. And these people were unable to see even the signs that they had. They had seen the miracle. They had seen the multiplying of the loaves. But they still kind of went back to, oh, but we know his mom and dad. This is too simple. This can't be. And they got stuck in that. They got stuck in that. I think oftentimes, too, we can look at things when it comes to faith and get really caught up in the complexities of it, get caught up in what it is that we think that's a big journey and we have this reference point in our lives. You know, for the people back then, their big reference point was Moses. What had Moses done? And Moses had somehow, mistakenly, they were saying he had brought manna from heaven. The bread came down every day from heaven and we just gathered it up. And that's their big deal. Wrapped up in that was a whole lot of ethnic pride, a whole bunch of intellectual pride. And they had this whole kind of picture that they had. And Jesus is saying, I want you to get rid of that, and I want you to come completely to me. It's as simple as coming to Jesus and saying, Jesus, I believe what you did for me on the cross. I believe it's by grace. It's a free gift to me, and I'm willing to simply receive it. And what happens then is when we take Jesus as the foundation point for our life, kind of the center, then from that comes the adventure of life. I think so oftentimes people say, I'm going to reject the simple answer of Jesus because, well, then does that become just a destination point and it's just dogma and it's just like a dead-end cul-de-sac? No, no. What it is it's the beginning from an adventure where our eyes and our minds open up to all the more truth when we come to see Jesus as simply truth. We miss out on that because we're chasing a bunch of other ideas and intellectual things out there, and God's saying, come back to me. You'll receive the bread if you come simply to me. And then finally, they kept coming back at him. And they said, they came back, they became confused and offended by Jesus. Verse 51 and 52, he says, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Anyone who eats this bread will live forever, and this bread which I will offer to the world may live is my flesh. Then the people began arguing with each other what he meant. How can this man give us flesh to eat? They asked. Jesus was aware that his disciples were complaining, so he said to them, does this offend you? We had a group of people who said, you know what? Okay, I'm going to reject Jesus because it's too simple. And then there's a whole group of other people going, now I'm getting confused. And they started making it too complex. And they ultimately got offended by him. And for some, and maybe even sometimes if we're really honest by ourselves, when Jesus comes to us and says, trust me, I'm willing to take care of things, we can get offended by that. We start to go, no. Jesus, I've got my plan. I've got my thing. I've got my ideas. And what it takes in order for us to receive the bread of life is to recognize who Jesus is, what his words mean. I think for this crowd, you know, crowds are pretty good sometimes at asking questions, but they don't often take seriously the answers that God gives them. And oftentimes they won't spend enough time being too reflective to go, okay, now what does Jesus mean by this? If he means eat my flesh, does he really mean that? No. It's a metaphor. These people weren't willing to just go, oh, okay, I get what he's saying. He's really saying, will you take me into your life, all of who I am, the truth of who I am, and give up and empty yourself of all the other ideas that may be different from the truth? We have metaphors all the time. And this morning, when it comes to eating and food and everything, I look at my girls. We have a little fluffy dog, and our girls love this little dog. And they come and they cuddle this dog, and they go, oh, Moxie, I love you. I just want to eat you. It doesn't mean they actually want to eat the dog. I don't think that's what they mean. But they just want, I just want more of you. I want more of you. Just so, you know what Jesus invites us is to come to him and say, I just want more of you, God. I really want you to meet me where I am. Jeremiah, the prophet, said, when your words came, I ate them, and they were my joy and my heart's delight. God says, would you come to me and say, I want you, I want all of you, I want you in me. That kind of prayer, that kind of desire, God will honor that. He will come and he will meet you in that. I love the poem. I conclude with this. Someone wrote this prayer, actually. I think it's an applicable prayer for all of us. I think I had it printed up as well. It says, from the cowardice that shrinks from new truths, from the laziness that is content with half-truths, from the arrogance that thinks it knows all truth, O God of truth, deliver us. Coming to Jesus, the bread of life, and saying, you are the truth. You are what I need in my life. And the wonderful conclusion, in spite of the crowds walking away from Jesus and deserting him, that's what it tells us at the end of this passage. In verse 68, we have the wonderful words of Peter. And Jesus is looking at the disciples and says, are you going to leave too? And Peter says, Lord, to whom would we go? You have the words that give eternal life. We believe and we know that you are the Holy One of God. At this moment, Peter got it. He said, it's you that I'm going to. It's you that sustains me and nourishes me. Where else do I find that? Something eternal. The great I am is saying, I will meet you on that eternal, deepest level in your heart. So this morning as we go to communion, I want to invite you to come and take these symbols as the symbols of what Jesus did for us in his ultimate act of self-sacrifice, in his giving of himself, his body broken for us, saying, when we come to him, we say, God, I want your truth in my life. I want to invite the band to come up. And we're going to have a number of stations up at the front here where you can come and receive the bread and the juice. It's a little different this morning. We've actually taken bread chunks, and you're welcome to grab a chunk of bread and just take it at the end and dip it into the juice, just a portion of it. And then just hold on to it. It absorbs it okay, so you can just go back to your seat with the bread and the juice together. And then we will take it together. So if you want to just dip it and bring it back, we'll have a few groups of people up here to do that. And there is one of these plates is gluten-free bread. So the gluten-free bread will be at the far side over there. So if you're gluten-free, that's the place to go for that. So I invite you to stand together. We're going to sing together and come and take the bread, and then we'll take it together afterwards.